How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 43 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. It's season preview week at Locked On Thunder and at the Norman Transcript. Today, I'm going over the guards. I'll tell you guys the schedule a little bit later in the show. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review, hopefully 5 stars if you're feeling like it. Find us on audioboom.com, too. You can go to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage, too. Remember, I'm on every day of the week now, off weekends, but shows Monday through Friday. No guests today, all preview. Tuesday, going to be going over the wings. Wednesday, the big men. Thursday, the coaching, the schemes, and all the rest of that stuff. And Friday will be predictions and expectations. I'll probably get into some gambling stuff there, too, because let's be real, the gambling's really fun. It's like the most fun. Today, though, it's the guards. Going to stick away from the illegal stuff, just talk about some basketball and what's to come of the Thunder guards this year. Quick format for the show. I'm going to go through each player, talk about them as a player. I'm also going to talk about overall strengths and weaknesses, importances to the team, playing time, all that stuff. Keep in mind, it's also Thunder season preview week at the Norman Transcript, not just at Locked On Thunder. The paper is following the same concept as the podcast. These are meant to complement each other. That's not a coincidence, and it's not out of anything else. The preview for the guards goes up Monday morning, just the same as the podcast. It's the same schedule all week. Wings Tuesdays, Bigs Wednesday, et cetera, et cetera. So make sure to get on normantranscript.com. Check out that content when you get a chance. They should be able to complement each other well. At least that's the intent. So, the guards. Here's the roster of guards, just to keep it fresh in your mind. Russell Westbrook, Cameron Payne, and Ronnie Price are the point guards. Victor Oladipo, Alex Abrines, Anthony Morrow are the shooting guards. I'm considering Andre Roberson. He's off this one. Don't worry, he's still on the roster. He's just going to be with the Wings podcast that I'm going to do on Tuesday. Basically, point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center is an archaic way to look at basketball. So for season previews, I'm trying to look at it more from a role standpoint. You've got your ball handlers, usually the guards, or the ones who guard guards and not wings. Abrines could kind of be on either. You know, the rest, you got your wings, you got your bigs. And Abrines could, to me, is the most on the fence. He could be a guard, he could be a wing. I just anticipate him guarding more twos than threes this year, so I threw him on the guards ones. If you don't like it, you can sue me. I will welcome your lawsuit. Anyway, we'll get to more of why Abrines, I think, is a little bit more of a guard than a wing this year when we get to his preview. But first up, Russell Westbrook. You heard of him? He's pretty good. So here are the five categories I'm going to go through with each player. Expectations, the role, the playing time, the numbers, and the importance. Start off, Russell Westbrook, expectations. The numbers are obviously going to be huge. People talk about how the numbers are going to be huge. But the numbers were huge last year. Honestly, I don't think the numbers are going to be that much crazier this year than they were last year. You know, I mean, maybe I'm meshing together expectations and numbers, so I'll save the actual number predictions for when we get to them. I don't think he's going to break an all-time record for usage. You know, the expectations are he's got to handle the ball more now than he ever has before, and he doesn't have a guy to fall back on who's the caliber of Kevin Durant. He's got to keep up the offense. Now, I think as long as the offense basically stays above 18th or 19th in the league from an efficiency standpoint, from a points per possession standpoint, I think Russell Westbrook is probably doing his job. And I think Russell Westbrook will do his job this year. I think the expectations have to be improvement on defense. I think that's the biggest thing for him this year. I thought last year was possibly his worst defensive year. He died on a lot of screens. His gambling was a little out of control. But man, that's always going to be the case. That's just his personality as a defender. There are good defenders who are gamblers. I mean, you see that a lot, especially in point guards. Like, most defenders point guard defenders are gamblers. You don't see a lot of really good point guard defenders who aren't gamblers. Like the Chris Pauls of the world are rare. The Mike Conleys of the world, they're rare. Chris Paul, Mike Conley, who else isn't really a gambler but is a good defensive player? Jrue Holiday doesn't really gamble. I think he's a wonderful defender. Patrick Beverley is a great defender, but you see him kind of flying around because he's so energetic every once in a while. They're really good, athletic point guard defenders who are really good. A lot of them gamble. You know, John Wall gambles. Eric Bledsoe gambles. It's cool that he gambles. The bigger issue with Westbrook last year was him dying on ball screens. He was running into those like he ran into walls. That can't be the case this year. And I realize he's got to put some more effort into his offense this year. And that a lot of the reason that his defense fell off a little bit was because you need more effort on the offensive end. I realize that there's a trade-off there. A guy can't be at a superstar usage on one end and a superstar usage on the other end. It's just not the way it works. There's a reason LeBron James cruises through defense in the regular season and was still, I thought, you know, anybody will tell you, really good during the playoffs and the finals last year for the Cavs. It's because it's just exhausting. It's too exhausting. You can't do it. But I do think we have to expect his defense. It doesn't have to be all league level. It's got to be better than it was last year. It's got to be better. And I think that's a fair expectation. And I think that's the thing we got to be talking about with Westbrook. Everyone knows the numbers are going to be great because the numbers are always great. Whether he averages, whether he averages more points or the same amount of points, whatever the assists are, they're going to be great. It's Russell Westbrook. Of course. Of course they are. But I do think the defense needs to be better. There are certain things about Westbrook's defense which honestly frustrate me. You see him go around a screen on defense, follow a ball handler on a ball screen or something, and Westbrook will, instead of just fighting in front of the screen or going behind the screen and trying to catch up with the guy while his big catches up with him, Westbrook will slow down for a half a step so we can try to poke out the ball from behind him. That's frustrating. Every once in a while it works, but it doesn't work well often enough to justify that he does it all the time. Those sorts of things, if we can cut those things out in a defense that doesn't have Ibaka and doesn't have Durant, which I think will be a good defense and a higher-ranked defense than it was last year. But those sorts of things, if you can cut those out, I think that can be part of the expectation. I think we saw a great evolution of his offensive game last year and arguably his best overall season. But I think it's time to see an evolution in his defensive game. I think that's a fair expectation for somebody as great as Russell Westbrook is. And I think that's something the Thunder are going to need this year because they're going to be a defensive-minded team. The role. This one's easy, right? We know the role. He's going to handle the ball a ton. Everything's going to go through him. He's going to have to create in the lane. He's going to have to create in penetration. He's going to have to finish over defenders in the paint. They're going to hope that his three-point shooting at least gets into the, 33-ish percent range. I think they'd be ecstatic with that after the last couple years of him hovering around 30. But that's the role. That's the role. The playing time, 36 minutes a game? Probably something like that. He'll hover around that every night. 36 a game. That's what I assume he'll be at. Anything more than that, I think you might be exhausting your stars in today's day and age. You don't see guys average 40 a game anymore. So that's not a thing that's going to happen. I think something like 36 a game is fine, and he'll be good. The numbers. This is interesting because I don't know. I think he's – I mean, the scoring is going to go up, I think, because he's going to handle the ball more. He's going to shoot more. Though I don't think it'll be a historic level. I think it'll be more than last year when his usage was one of his lowest in a few years. I think he'll end the year something like 28 a game like he was a couple years ago. I think the assists are going down. People think the assists are going up because he's handling the ball more. Maybe his total passes will go up, but I think his assists are going down. More than a quarter of his assists last year were to Kevin Durant, and that's an easy assist. When you kick it out to Kevin Durant, that's an easy assist. And it's not just because you're kicking out to Kevin Durant for an open three or something. It's because you got Kevin Durant cutting. It's because Westbrook, will get, just like everybody, will get those, cheapy assists where he passes it out and, Durant pump fakes and goes two dribbles to the rim and pulls up or maybe gets himself a layup and it really shouldn't be an assist, but the NBA is lenient in counting assists, so the official score counts it as an assist, and he gets those from Durant too. So when you're not playing with his good players, when you're not playing with his good shooters, the assists are going to go down in my mind. It's not like he wasn't handling the ball a lot. Now he's handling the ball a lot and he's going to get the ball more. And he's going to get more assists. I don't think that's going to be the case. Now, I don't think his assists are going to like plummet or anything, but I think he might be around the same number he was last year, which is a little over 10, and maybe just drops off and goes back to his career average. Maybe he's in the 7, 8, 9 range. Maybe he's somewhere closer to there than he is to having an up in his assists, and I don't see why Durant's departure would affect his rebounding. So I'll keep him at 7, which is where he was the last couple of years. Now, those are MVP numbers. If that puts him in the MVP conversation, for sure. I don't know if he's the MVP, but that puts him in the MVP conversation. And then there's the importance. The fact that he's in the MVP conversation. We could start with that. I mean, I think Russell Westbrook is arguably this year the most essential player on his team. Now I guess it depends on how you define most valuable player and whether you think he's the favorite to win MVP. Vegas has him at the favorite to win MVP. He's plus 200. That's 2-1 odds to win MVP. Those odds are a little tough for me to advise anybody taking those. 2-1 against the field. I wouldn't bet on anyone 2-1 MVP. Especially someone on a team that most people don't think is going to win 50 games. So, I mean, the importance, if you're just talking from the strictest definition of value to his team, I mean, everything's going to go through Westbrook this year. Everything's going to go through Westbrook. But his backup, the next guy we're going to talk about, this is where we'll get to the interesting stuff. Everyone knows Westbrook. We all feel the same way about Russell Westbrook at this point. I don't know if we all feel the same way about Cameron Payne, though. So let's talk about Cameron Payne. He's our next guy. Expectations for Cameron Payne. I think what the Thunder need from him this year is just reliability and consistency. That's it. Because they didn't get that last year. And there might be reasons out of Cameron Payne's control for that. That's possible. I'm willing to admit that. He was hurt. I mean, he was obviously hurt. He had a foot injury, which eventually led to off-season surgery on a Jones fracture that he had to repair in his right foot. That's a good excuse. He was in a walking boot for a lot of last season. I mean, he was in a walking boot, walking around in between games for a lot of last season. So, that's a good excuse for Cameron Payne to have an inconsistent season, but he played himself in and out of playing time. And some of that's on Billy Donovan, too. I think there's a really legit argument. I've made it. I think there's a really legit argument for the fact that Payne should have been consistently in the rotation more last year. You know, in those random games in February and March, Payne should have been playing. Especially after Augustine was no longer on the roster and Randy Foy was the de facto backup point guard, even though Randy Foy had spent 10 years in the NBA and was never an NBA point guard. I think just playing Cameron Payne, getting him some experience, even if he wasn't yet ready, just getting him some consistent minutes. You know, the Thunder played him in the postseason, and he didn't perform well. And part of that was he didn't look ready. And I don't think the Thunder put him in a position to look ready. You know, he was 21 years old, he was a first-year player. I don't think the Thunder put him in a position to look ready. I think organizations, and I think the Thunder generally do an excellent job of this. So this is not an overall critique. This is a very, very, very specific one. But I think organizations with young players, they have to put their guys in a position to succeed more than the young players have to create a position to succeed. That's why you hear guys talk about, you know, they went to the right situation, wrong situation. I think Payne's in a good situation. I think he's in a really good situation. But I think there was a little bit of mismanagement with him last year. Now, maybe that was... it's easier to say this from the outside. Maybe a lot of that just had to do with his foot. Maybe. That's possible. I'm willing to accept that argument. But considering the fact that none of us really know for certain what it was, what they need this year that they didn't get last year is just reliability. Whether it's for 22 minutes a night, or 18 minutes a night, or 14 minutes a night, or 12 minutes a night, or however much Cameron Payne is going to play, They need reliability. They need consistent backup point guard minutes because he doesn't have that safety net this year that he did a couple of years ago. The role. Give me the role. The role. That does lead us into the role. The reason they need consistent backup point guard minutes from him is because he's got to be the consistent backup point guard. There aren't a lot of facilitators on this team. There's Payne, there's Oladipo, there's Westbrook. That's about it. Like, Payne is the tertiary ball handler right now. That wasn't the case last year. That's a big deal right now. He doesn't have Randy Foy to fall back on or DJ Augustine to fall back on. There's not a safety net for him right now. The safety net is Ronnie Price. That net can break. So Payne's got to play consistently. Now they say he's going to be healthy by training camp. They better hope he's ready healthy by training camp. And all signs that we've seen says he will be healthy by that. So that's fine. But he's got to be consistent in that backup point guard role. Playing time, it really all depends on whether he can play next to Russell Westbrook. Because he's going to get 12 minutes a game. If Westbrook's getting 36, he's going to get 12 minutes a game as the backup point guard. Now, I don't think he's only going to play 12 minutes. I think he's probably going to be on something like the 18-minute-a-game role. And I think the Thunder drafted him in the first round with the hope. Now, maybe there was a little bit of Westbrook insurance thought in there, but they drafted him in the first round in the hope, in a best-case scenario, Cameron Payne can play off the ball next to Russell Westbrook. That Cameron Payne can shoot a little bit, he can handle the ball a little bit, and he can play as a two-guard next to Russell Westbrook in a league that's gone to a lot of two-point guard lineups. And the Thunder have been grooming him that way. They played Cameron Payne and they played Samaje Christen next to each other in Summer League a lot. That was intentional. That was a way to show that both guys could play off the ball, both guys could play next to point guards. That was a big deal for both of those guys who Payne's already there, and they hope Christen can be he's in the organization, he's coming to training camp, but he's not a guaranteed contract on a team that has 16 already. So they hope that both those guys can be there, and that was a way of grooming. So maybe he gets 6 more next to Westbrook. If that works out, I think he's in around the 18 a game role. If we're down to playing time now. I think he's in about 18 a game. About 12 behind Westbrook, about 6 next to him, or maybe 6. Yeah, 6 sounds right, and about 18 minutes a game. I think that sounds about right for him in his second year, especially if he's going to give consistent minutes. If that's what's going to happen, if he's going to shoot the ball okay, if he's going to facilitate a little bit, if he's going to be part of a second unit that can maybe he can run a little bit. I think that seems about right for him. As for the numbers, I think they'd be excited if he shot 35% from 3. I think that's an important number for him. If he can give them 3-point shooting, which they need, and which is mostly going to come from their guards because their wings and bigs, aside from Ilyas Ovar, are not going to shoot much from 3. So I think if he can shoot 35% from 3, that's a big deal. The importance, I mean, that's an easy one, right? Might be easier than Russell Westbrook. Ronnie Price is the third-string point guard. Ronnie Price does a bunch of things well. But I think Ronnie Price serves you best as a third-string point guard. And if he has to be bumped up, he's a little bit behind in his role. So I think that's a big deal. He's got to maintain as that backup point guard because I think he's got really good talent. I really do. I think he's really, really talented. I think he could be good. And if he can make a jump as a 22-year-old into just consistency, just reliable basketball on a night-in, night-out basis, that's a big deal. That's a big deal for them. Next up is Ronnie Price. Expectations. I think he's just got to be great in the clubhouse. I think he's got to be great in the locker room. I think that was a big part of this signing. I think Ronnie Price has a reputation. You talk to everyone. It's amazing. I've talked to a bunch of people about Ronnie Price. You talk to everyone about Ronnie Price. People just gush about Ronnie Price. People love Ronnie Price. Everyone who knows him. You hear terms like future coach. You hear people just gush about him as a as a guy in the locker room, as a mentor for young players, as a teammate. People love Ronnie Price. People love Ronnie Price. Now, the role is probably going to come. I think his most important role is going to come off the court. Now, that doesn't mean I really don't mean that in a demeaning sense at all. I think that's essential. There are a lot of young players on this team. I think with his reputation, the way he is respected around the league, he's basically another assistant coach. Now, I think he's going to play every once in a while, but I think his most important role, grooming Cameron Payne, talking to the young guys, teaching the young guys about off-the-court life, I think that's a really important role for Ronnie Price, and I think that's a big reason why they signed him. Remember, they signed Ronnie Price for 2 years. They committed to Ronnie Price. That doesn't mean he has to be on the team for those 2 years, but Ronnie Price is a guy you think would get 1 year. He got a two-year deal, two guaranteed years, not a player option on the second year. He got two guaranteed years. So they committed to Ronnie Price. I think a big part of that has to do with just his character, his personality. The way that he can help this team in the locker room, I think, is a big deal. The playing time, I don't think it's going to be consistent unless Payne really sinks. I really do think Payne will be more consistent this year. I think that's going to happen. I think that's a good expectation for him, just consistency. But I if that happens, then I don't really see how Price sneaks into the rotation. If he shot better in his career, I mean, he shot well down the stretch after he came back from an elbow injury that year, last year. But other than that, he's never really been a three-point shooter. You know, if he shot, maybe that's a way he could get in. He's always struggled to run an offense. He's a defensive-minded guy. He's good defending the ball. He's really good defending the ball, actually. He plays super hard. But he's not a guy who's going to run an offense and take him to a capable standing. If he's your guy running your second unit, you're probably not going to have a great offense in your second unit. The numbers, I don't know. I mean, they're low. They'll be low. I don't think he's going to play very much. I think his role is mostly as basically an extension of the coaching staff, and I think that's really valuable on this team, on a really young team. I think he's really important. Like, I don't think the numbers are nearly as important as what he is as someone who can contribute to the team. And the importance, like I said, he's just a guy who's got to help with Payne. He's got to help with someone like Oladipo, who's 24. I mean, basically everyone on this team is 20 to 24 years old who could get rotation minutes. Stop from Westbrook, 27. Nilyasova, 29. Basically everyone's there. Another young guy, 24-year-old, Victor Oladipo. Let's talk about him next. Expectations. I think he's going to have the best year of his career. I think he was good in the second half last year. Now, Oladipo's never been great. He's been good. But he's another guy who's been a little inconsistent. Now, that could have something to do with the organization he's played in. Not as stable as the Thunder or the Magic. They're not. But I think consistent play from Oladipo, maybe another season in which he improves in his three-point shooting. That's happened the last few years. Shot really well down the stretch from three. Maybe that could carry over. I don't think he's going to be, you know, a 40% three-point shooter or anything. But improvement in these areas, more disciplined defense, examining how his defense changes on a different team with different players, different schemes, examining how it improves, hoping it does improve. I think those are all fair. The role, I mean, here's the thing. Victor Oladipo is going to have opportunities this year because if you've noticed going through this, we're on our fourth guy, there aren't a lot of proven NBA creators. Now, maybe Payne comes up and has a really good year because I do think he is going to become a good player. But he hasn't proven it in the league yet. Oladipo is the only other facilitator who has proven it in the NBA on this team other than Westbrook. That's crazy because there's not a wing who has that. So Oladipo, he's getting his opportunities. He can get off to a slow start. And the Thunder are still going to keep giving him the ball. They're going to funnel him the ball a lot. He's going to get a ton of touches this year. He's probably going to get more touches than he ever has. And that says something because he used to play point guard on a sub-500 team. I mean, I think he's going to get a lot of touches, even though he's playing next to Russell Westbrook. I think they could let him run the second unit offense a little bit. They could play him next to Payne some. I think that's a possibility. And just kind of let them co-run the second unit. I think these are all possibilities. And he is going to get touches because there just aren't a lot of guys who are going to do it. So even if he's off to a slow start, it's happening. The playing time, like I said, that the touches and the minutes, same concept. He's getting them. Because they need him to be good for them to be good. If he doesn't have a good year, the Thunder are going to be in a lot of trouble. I think he will have a good year. I think he'll have a really good year. And I think he's going to get better and better because he's still only 24. And he's been in some troubled spots in Orlando with the way that they've used him. It's been a funky fit in some ways. I think it's a better fit in Oklahoma City, even if there are weird situations, you know, just kind of his fit with Westbrook isn't perfect. They both like to handle the ball, and Oladipo's kind of a combo guard. It's not perfect. It's not terrible. It's not perfect. But I think he's going to have his best year. I think they're both going to make it work. I think it's going to happen. The numbers. He's been like a 15-5-4 guy or whatever. I think he's going to score some more. I think the usage will jump. I think he's going to struggle to get in the lane a little bit. The good news is, even though he gets to the lane so well, like naturally he gets to the lane so well because that's his game. He penetrates. And with Westbrook, he penetrates. And that's where a lot of the Thunder guard is going to come from. Those guys getting into the lane, creating shots for themselves and for others just by dribbling into the paint and penetration. That's where a lot of the offense is going to come. But the thing with Oladipo is Oladipo's had a decent amount of practice having to drive into the lane without a lot of shooters, without great spacing around him. Because the Magic have never had great spacing. They've never had great shooters. And he still manages to get to the lane. So him doing it next to Russell Westbrook, that's not necessarily new for him, aside from the fact that he's never played with anyone as good as Russell Westbrook. So there are going to be times where I think he'll struggle to get to the rim. Same thing with Westbrook. When I say struggle, I mean relatively, compared to how good they can be if they have spacing. Because I think there are going to be guys collapsing in the lane on those two guys, and that's how you're going to have to defend this team. Just dare them to beat you from three. But Oladipo, I think the assists are going to go up this year if he plays with the second unit a decent amount. I think the usage will go up. I think the scoring will go up. I don't see why he can't be like an 18-6-5 guy that gives you above average defense. The importance is that he and Russell Westbrook basically set the tone for this offense. They might have more of a tone setting feel on defense than people give them credit for too. They might. That's possible. Because they're going to be able to get out running. There are going to be games where both those guys are going to get a lot of steals because they both get steals. Because they do jump passing lanes and they do poke the ball away. And they're going to get out running. And when they do, I mean, those guys are great in transition. It's another reason why I think the defense is going to be aggressive. It's going to be aggressive at the top with Oladipo and with Westbrook. They're going to trap a lot on pick and rolls, I think. I think we're going to see them trap teams that you don't conventionally trap on pick and rolls. They're going to be blitzing like crazy. It's going to happen. And part of that is not just because that's their defensive skill set. It's also because that's an easier way to get live ball turnovers. And when you get live ball turnovers, you can get out running. And I think that's how the Thunder are going to maintain not having, I think that's going to have how they're going to maintain having a decent enough offense to stay in the playoff picture. Because I think their half court offense could struggle, but I think they're going to be a really good transition offense team. Their guards run the floor well. Robertson runs the floor well. Adams is very athletic. These guys run the floor well. I think that works well. They can play at a fast pace. They can take advantage of mismatches because they're physical and they're strong. They set the tone in a lot of different ways, Oladipo and Westbrook, with their just explosiveness and speed and athleticism and skill set getting to the rim. Big deal. Huge deal. Makes or breaks the team. And that's really what Oladipo's doing this year. Next guy, Anthony Morrow. Expectations. He's going to make threes. And that's something the Thunder need more than they did last year. Look, they weren't a great shooting team last year. It's the expectation with Morrow. That's the thing with Morrow. That's the expectation, and it's the role. We know what Anthony Morrow is. We know what Anthony Morrow is. Anthony Morrow is as good of a three-point shooter when you get him standing there is in the league. He is as good as you can possibly find. His release is as quick as there is out there as a catch-and-shoot guy. And his accuracy is phenomenal. And he is an unbelievable three-point shooter. He's going to stand on the side, and he's going to space the floor, and the Thunder need spacing more than they did last year. Thunder were middle of the pack in makes and percentage last year from three. This year, I think they're falling off. They lost to Ibaka. They lost Waiters. They lost that guy named Kevin Durant. Well, I know I'm not supposed to acknowledge, but he's gone. He made a lot of threes. That's a big loss. That's a big deal. I think everybody knows this. I don't think I need to say that. But whenever I tweet or write about Kevin Durant, I get a tweet from someone about how I shouldn't talk about him now that he's not in Oklahoma City anymore. I feel like I'm not really doing my job if I ignore him. So I kind of have to bring him up. I'm sorry. I know someone's crying. Someone's crying. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you cry. But I got to bring him up. But Morrow, he'll make threes. But his defense is going to make him go in and out of the rotation. It's going to happen. That's when we get to the playing time. I think he'll be a matchup guy this year, I think. That's kind of what he was last year. There are some teams you can hide him on defense a little more. Or maybe his defense just doesn't, show up as much. Other teams can't take advantage of him as much. Maybe you're playing on the second night of a back-to-back. Another team didn't have, time to game plan and exploit his defense or whatever it is. Certain times he's going to work. You can play him 20 minutes and he's just going to knock down threes. The dude is an unbelievable three-point shooter. Because of that, I think we can expect the numbers to be great from three. He's a 40% three-point shooter, shot under 40% last year. Still shot a really good percentage, still shot like 38% or something. But I think we can expect 40% from three. He works hard, and he works really hard, and I do think he's going to shoot over 40% again this year. He's a 40% three-point shooter in his career, come up to his average. But the numbers are going to go in and out. The importance is that how many above-average three-point shooters are there on this team for their position? Three. If you were sitting next to me right now, you'd see I'm holding up three fingers for emphasis and barely shaking my hand back and forth just to show emphasis. Three guys, Ilyasova, Morrow, and who am I forgetting? And Abrines, thank you. Alex Abrines. Those are the guys. That's it. Unless we're counting Singler because he's 37% from his career in three, which we could, but he was 30% last year. Proven guys, you're going to get threes. Those are the guys. So, Abrines, we might not even have to count him because he shot tremendous percentages in Europe. Let's talk about Abrines. He's the last guard we have. Expectations. He shot tremendous percentages in Europe, 43.5% from three last year, playing for FC Barcelona. FC Barcelona. FC Barcelona Rafa was where he was at. My Spanish accent. Alex Gilbert Abrines. When he makes threes this year, we're calling him Gilbert Abrines. You know that, right? That's happening, Alex. It is absolutely happening. But the expectations for him have to be, just like with Morrow, they have to be that he's in and out of the rotation. He's a rookie. Sorry, I know people are excited about him because he shoots and comes off screens and whatnot, but he's a rookie. The expectations for any rookie wasn't a top five pick, and Abrines was a second round pick 3 years ago. The expectations for him have to be that he's at best in and out of the rotation because rookies are even the best rookies usually are not great players, and they go in and out of the rotation. Rookies are inconsistent. Their role, he's just going to be a shooter. They're going to run him off screens. They're going to run off pin downs. That's the thing that he does that no one else on this team does. Another thing they lose with Durant, movement in the offense. People talk about how there wasn't a lot of movement in the Thunder offense. Well, the Thunder actually lost some ability to create movement with Durant going, because they used to run Durant off a ton of pin downs. That's how they get him open. Yeah, he'd run off pin downs and he would isolate off of those pin downs from the elbow or from the wing. But he'd run off pin downs. He'd run off the, you know, now Abrines is a guy, you can run floppy with him. You can run him off down screens. You can run him off flares. I know I'm getting inside basketball right now. Basically, just know Abrines creates movement. He creates movement. That's a big deal. I'll talk about this when I talk about the schemes, or when I write about the schemes, I should say, on Thursday. That's when I do this coaching section. I'm going to put some videos in there. I'm going to do some play breakdowns of plays I think we could see them run, things like that. Throw those online. You'll be able to watch those on normantranscript.com on Thursday. I'm going to put those up. But that's a big deal, creating motion and movement in the offense and within the defense, making the opposing defense move. Huge deal. The playing time, like I said, in and out of the rotation. I think he could end the year around 15 to 18 a game. I think if they're getting more from him and if it's consistent, wow, that's awesome. That's a great start for him, especially if he's shooting a great percentage from three. That's a great start for him. The numbers, I mean, look, the numbers from three were wonderful. We've seen guys come over from Europe who were supposed to be great shooters and have absolutely blossomed here. We've seen other guys who were great shooters in Europe and they've fallen off. The numbers that are important for him, I think, are catch and shoot threes. Last year, he was in the 90-something percentile among catch-and-shoot three-point shooters in Europe. That's according to Synergy Sports. 90-something percentile. He was the 90-something percentile in just about every type of three you could take. Pick and roll threes, catch-and-shoot, whatever it is. He was excellent. He graded out excellent in everything. But catch-and-shoot and running off screens, if he can shoot high percentages in those situations, that's huge. Because that means guys are going to chase him off screens. And guys are going to chase him to the corners. And the floor is going to open up. And you actually have a weapon, another way to get points that can be organic. That's a huge deal. And that's his importance. Just creating the defense to move. That's it. Now he's got to hit the threes in order to make the defense close out on him. In order to force more miscommunications when guys go around screens to try to guard him. He's got to make those in order to make guys make quick decisions, in order to intimidate guys into making the wrong decisions. But that's where the importance of the made threes comes in. It's not really the 3 points you're getting. It's the effect it has on the rest of the defense, because the Thunder don't have a tremendous cutter in their offense. And if he can be a good cutter, if he can be a guy who can run off screens and score, because Robertson is an okay cutter. Oladipo has a good cut every once in a while. Like, that's something I think Oladipo can get really good at. And you know, to Oladipo's credit, it could just be the offense he was playing in too. That's not something we really can know until we see him in another offense. But I think Oladipo has that capability. We haven't seen him become a great cutter. Robertson every once in a while has a nice baseline cut, but they don't have a lot of tremendous off-ball movers. And if Abrines can be that guy, like even Morrow is an amazing shooter, but you don't run him off screens. Morrow is a stable catch and shoot guy. He's not really running off, you know, a pin down is a screen basically set around the block that sets a guy free up for a 3-pointer basically, or maybe up for a curl and, you know, the elbow or whatever it is, but he's running out towards the 3-point line. That's a pin down. And you don't run more off pin downs, but it brings the guy you can maybe do it. And that's a big deal. Just getting the defense moving. That's huge. That's it for today's preview. Before we head out, remember I'm on weekday now, Monday through Friday. This week is Thunder Season Preview Week, as you can tell, since, you know, we're 38 minutes into this or whatever we are. And unless you've been tuning out, you can tell that was a preview. Remember, it's also Thunder Season Preview Week at Norman Transcript, especially for the coaches preview. I'm going to be putting in videos and that kind of stuff, like I said before, just breaking down plays, explaining schemes. I think the visuals are going to help a lot. So you can check all that out at normantranscript.com. Tomorrow, both at Locked On Thunder and at the Transcript is a preview of the Wings. If you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those. Head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, including those previews, and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.